Recording in progress.
Good morning, Chair. Chairperson.
Hi, Chair.
Morning, Chair.
How are you?
I'm good and yourself, Chair.
All right. Can you start in 5 minutes?
Excuse me, Chair?
Can we start in 5 minutes?
In 5 minutes.
Yes.
No, it's fine, Chen.
Thank you. Yes, Committee Secretary. Let me take this opportunity to formally declare this meeting of the Select Committee on Transport Public Service Administration, Public Works Infrastructure and Monitoring Evaluation open. We are meeting today to process a number of items. We received the presentation from the content advisor. Particularly with a view to deal with the aspect that the member of the presenter who has offered to present to us will not be around. So just to make sure that we make things much more easier for the members of the Select Committee. Written presentation on the Marine Pollution Amendment Bill. Second item that we'll deal with, it will be the response to the written submissions. And then we'll then also deal with the consideration of the Luxembourg Protocol to the Convention on International Interest in Mobile Equipment on matters specific to railway rolling stock. And then we'll then deal with the minutes of our last meeting. Those are the items that we'll be dealing with. Having said that, let me then formally extend a word of welcome to all members of the Select Committee. Members, our guests, and then the committee staff who are always with us, our public, and the PFG group, but also the media contingent that will be joining us. Having said that, let me then check with the committee secretary whether there are any apologies that we have received.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, honorable members and colleagues. We did not receive any apology, but the only apology that we can note is honorable Protothets. He's raised the issue of connectivity, but he's in the meeting.
Okay.
I also see the hand of Tandi. Chairperson, maybe she's got an apology.
Yes, Tandi.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. Yes, the minister is attending the cabinet this morning. So the delegation, we have the DDG Rail for presenting the Luxembourg. We have a DDG Maritime, Mr. Madia, also Mr. Ntuli, who will be responding to the comments that we received from the public. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Tandi. Do we have the DM, Tandi?
I don't see the DM in the platform, but I will check because he was due to travel to Cape Town this morning because of the answering of oral question in the National Assembly. I will check with the office now and then come back to the meeting. Thank you.
Okay, Tandi. Having said that, let them note those apologies from the ministry. And without any waste of time, let's then give over to Dr. Clark. Dr. Clark.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to everyone present on the platform. The bill before us is the Marine Pollution Prevention of Pollution from Ships Amendment Bill B5 2020 of 2022. The bill was passed by a National Assembly, transmitted to the NCOP for concurrence, and referred to the Select Committee on 7 March 2023. The Department of Transport briefed the committee on the bill on 18 October 2023, and on 4 February 2024, an advert was placed in national media calling for written submissions on the bill with a deadline of 26 February 2024. The Select Committee will today hear written submissions received as well as the department's response thereto. The objects of the bill is to amend the Marine Pollution Prevention of Pollution from Ships Act 1986 so as to give effect to Annexure 4 of the International Convention for the Prevention of Pollution from Ships, that international convention commonly being referred to as MARPOL. Further objects are to incorporate the 1997 protocol in order to give effect to Annexure 6 of the convention and to provide for matters connected therewith. So MARPOL Annexure 4 regulates the activities for treatment and safe disposal of sewage from ships, and MARPOL Annexure 6 is the main global instrument that addresses ship energy efficiency management and greenhouse gas emissions. The Select Committee received one written submission on the bill, and as the Chair has indicated, where stakeholders are not available to address the committee on the submission, I provide the committee with an overview of the submission received. The submission that was received from the Worldwide Fund for Nature, which is an international independent conservation organization. The WWF essentially had four areas of input that they provided submissions on. The first area of input was a strong call for the inclusion of greenhouse gases in the definition of pollutants or emissions associated with shipping. And the motivation is as follows. According to the United Nations Environmental Programme, air pollution also includes greenhouse gases such as carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrogen oxides. Anthropogenic greenhouse gases, being gases from human activities such as shipping, are known to cause global warming and climate change. Greenhouse gases from shipping are mainly in the form of carbon dioxide from the combustion engine. Furthermore, 6% of the fuel, being mostly methane, of ships that are powered by liquefied natural gas escapes uncombusted in the engine into the air. And methane is a potent greenhouse gas, which has 29.8 times the greenhouse gas warming potential of carbon dioxide measured over a 100-year period. The further motivation is that as signatories to both the International Maritime Organization Greenhouse Gas Strategy and Paris Agreement, South Africa should look to implement measures to reduce emissions from its shipping sector. The indicative emission reduction and the Paris Agreement could be adopted to be part of South Africa's Maritime Pollution Act to ensure that reduction of greenhouse gas emissions is accounted for. Finally, with regard to fishing vessels, reducing the carbon footprint will encourage fisheries to consider alternative gear operational measures that reduce carbon emissions and result in more sustainable fishing practices. The last three areas of focus for the submission was that the Act needs to address noise pollution emanating from ships, particularly when traversing through sensitive habitat, such as the core foraging grounds for African penguins. Mitigation could include reducing ship speeds in these areas and avoiding the area if possible, and prohibiting bunkering in sensitive areas. And that mitigation would serve a dual purpose, both to mitigate noise pollution and to reduce the risk of oil spillage and impact on the environment. Lastly, noise pollution emanating from seismic surveys should also be reduced to lower decibel levels that are considered safe for the environment and should be used as alternative methods to the air gun array. The third focus area for input was that other pollutions from ships also need to be regulated, such as hypersaline water, so that being water that has a higher than usual salt concentration, and warm water discharge from ships emanating through alternative gas-generated energy. The last area for submission was that light pollution from ships also need attention. Example was given of a squid fishery that uses bright lights in coastal waters at night to attract squid to the surface. However, the unintended consequence is the impact on flying insects' ability to navigate at night, which may result in many pollinating flying insects being lost at sea. And this is also an area that WWF feels should be given further attention. And that concludes the overview of the input by the WWF. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Doc, for taking us through the presentation. This slide, as we have indicated, is the presentation from WWF. And there are areas definitely that that are emerging from the presentation, and as a result thereof, I believe that it is only logical that we then take this opportunity to check with the members as to are there any other any clarity seeking questions that they would want to get from the presentation before we give over to the department to present. I think what is quite critical is the issues that are captured from the thrust of the of the presentation made by our doc. And what is quite clear is the need to make sure that at least we appreciate the thrust of the issues. Honorable Khan.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Greetings to honorable members. The Department of Transport, the committee staff, and the staff of Parliament. I just wanted to check, Chair, when I look at the presentation or read the presentation. I don't know, maybe the department will be able to clarify because the focus, I think, of the on the greenhouse gas emissions. It is my understanding that there's a bill before Parliament that is called the climate change bill that I believe that it addresses the issues that are raised in the I think the whole chapter focusing on the greenhouse gas emissions, I think chapter 5 of the bill. Also, there's a particular section of the bill that refers, I don't know if the submitter would not be covered by that bill in terms of the issues that it is raised. Just wanted that clarity, Chair. It's a pity that the person is not here to respond. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I think let's then give over to the department. Go straight to the department.
I think it might be the department's view and response.
Okay. Oh, brilliant. From the list that we received from Tandi, We have DDG for maritime transport, and the chief director is Mr. Madia and also Mr. Ntuli. And also they will be director for legislation. Let's give to the DDG as guest here. He will be able to guide in terms of who's the right person to respond, not only to the question posed by Honorable Khaya, but also the thrust of the issues that are raised by the Worldwide Fund for Nature. Because from the report, clearly the thrust of WWF centered around reducing the ship speed within the area, if possible, of sensitive habitat. It deals with the prohibition of bunkering, the noise pollution, but also light pollution from ship needs, which obviously the department will be in a better position to give us their context and angle from where the concern of the WWF might be coming from. Over to you, DDG.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. It's good to see you again. And
Thank
esteemed
you, thank you.
members in the committee, including the support staff of this esteemed committee. Chair, I was going to introduce my team, but you have done that on behalf of us. Thank you very much. I'm, however, going to request Mr. Nduli, who is the Chief Director for Legislation and Policy Development in the Maritime Branch, to take the Select Committee through, including the question that was asked by the honorable member of the committee. I think once he has taken through the committee, we'll be able to automatically answer that as well. But if we need to be specific, we'll do so. Over to you, Mr. Dooley. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Madia.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, DDG, for the introduction. May I just confirm that I'm audible?
Yes, you are.
Thank you very much. We had in advance prepared a set of responses to the matters raised, and we shared these with our office and as well as the Secretariat of Parliament. And I would like just to request that if that can be flighted on our behalf, or if we can be given rights to share the presentation that we'll be using as a form of response to the matters raised.
Thank you, Mr. Nduli. Can you help, Committee Secretary?
Okay.
Chairperson Enrico, can you give them the hosting rights?
Yes.
Yes, Lupeka, I've given them the hosting rights.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I see my presentation here. Can the chair and the members confirm that they can see what I see?
Yes, it is possible.
Thank you very much. Firstly, I think we welcome the comments that were received from WWF conveyed to the Select Committee and as well as then shared by the office of the Select Committee. So we've then listed the matters in this matrix, which I'm just scrolling up to the beginning of it. And just to say that we are grateful to WWF for raising the matters and for the interest of the members, for them just to be aware that the WWF is represented as an observer organized non-governmental organizations at the International Maritime Organization. So it would then be aware of the status of negotiations that are currently under the care of the IMO. Now, we have then, if we could just go through the matters as raised. Firstly, they have raised the issues pertaining to the anthropogenic greenhouse gases from activities such as shipping, being known to cause global warming and climate change, leading to substantial damages and increasingly irreversible losses to the marine environment, but also on the psychosphere, as well as coastal and open ocean system. They have as well raised the matters pertaining to the fact that ships powered by LNG have a methane slip of about 6%, and they've articulated well that the 6% of the fuel, which is mainly methane, escapes uncombusted, and which indicates the impact this has on the environment. And they've as well just reminded the Select Committee that shipping itself contributes to about 3% of the annual greenhouse gas emissions globally. Now, our response, Chairperson and the members, firstly acknowledges that matters raised by the WWF are part of the considerations being given by the IMO Marine Environment Protection Committee, to which South Africa participates fully, as it continues to review and aim to strengthen the present regulations, which are currently incorporated in Annex 6 with the ambitions of the present IMO GHG strategy, which was adopted last year. Now, until the IMO greenhouse gas discussions and improved regulations are concluded, it is the view of the department that it will be premature for South Africa to unilaterally impose measures in the form of the F in the department, which may be preemptive of the outcome of the negotiations. Members will appreciate that the negotiations are a little bit delicate at this stage, but IMO has made great progress with the strategy that it adopted. And the biggest challenge that must be considered is as well also the enforcement capacity, particularly in cases where we seek to go beyond the current text limits of the provisions of Annexes 4 and 6. It is therefore our view that as a state, we should continue working with the IMO in the development of future regulations, aiming at giving full effect to the IMO greenhouse gas emission strategy, and that South Africa must therefore prepare as appropriate new amendments soon after the approval by the relevant IMO organ of any new greenhouse gas emissions regulation measure. Therefore, the priority at this stage in the view of the department should focus on incorporating Annex 4 and Annex 6. And members would also appreciate that we have created in these amendments a mechanism that if there are any changes to the global regulations, the minister would be able to update the legislation in the form of making regulations to give effect to those changes that the IMO would have made. So we would like to as well, just if I could respond to the matter raised by the Honourable Member Khai, to say that all sectors have to contribute in reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And the bill that is currently being considered would then help the shipping industry to ensure that as they enter our territorial waters, that they, we, South Africa is able to enforce what the IMO has agreed to. Now, I would then move on to the next set of issues that we raised, and that relates to the opinion by the WWF that the bill needs also to make to address noise pollution emanating from ships, particularly when traversing through sensitive habitat, and mitigation could relate to reducing ship speed in these areas as one mitigating measure, or to avoid area if possible and to prohibit bunkering at sea in these sensitive areas. They went further, as Doctor has also indicated, that they hold the view that prohibiting bunkering in the said areas has a dual role in mitigating noise pollution and reduces the risk of oil spillage and impact on the environment. Our response is firstly on the noise, which is a matter that was also raised during the stages of the bill. And the response that we give here is in response at that level. And that international agreement regulating noise pollution from international shipping. However, from a safety of shipping point of view, especially concerning on which is shortly referred to as the noise code, enforced by the administrations for the design of ships, new ships, and operations of existing ships. For all the ships calling at South African ports, SAMHSA does check compliance with the noise code by the ships. And we appreciate the fact that this relates only to the noise on matters relating to noise outside as an impact of a ship's movement. And we wish then of the environment, we would just have to bring to the attention of the members, there is also no international accepted treaty that South Africa is party to, on the basis of which we can draft domestic legislation. Even if there was, this will require then a completely new process that must go through cabinet and consultations before it is brought to this level. As members would appreciate that there will be a number of other organizations who would have a particular interest on the noise caused by ships' movement. And on with regards to seismic surveys, the view of the department is that pollution emanating from seismic surveys must be considered by the approving or licensing authority so that this would be incorporated in the seismic survey agreements or licensing regime that that would then govern the performance of those companies that are doing these types of surveys. So the recommendation then from the department is that the proposed amendment is proposed by the present bill in its current form be given priority, considering the fact that the aim is to incorporate treaties that South Africa has already ratified, and that matters relating to outside noise from ships be not considered, and that the department should continue engaging with the relevant organs of state and the environmental organizations in finding the best way forward with an approach to regulate issue of noise during licensing for this type of activities. So the mandate of the department is constrained by an absence of a global instrument that regulates international shipping as it relates to noise. Now, there was also a set of recommendations which covers other pollution forms, where WWF proposed the need to better regulate other pollution forms from ships, such as hypersaline water and warm water discharge from ships emanating through alternative gas-generated energy, And that department's attention was drawn to the fact that this has already led to several environmental negative impacts and the actions that they have taken to deal with these type of activities. The response of the department then is that although these proposals contribute in the debate, they however require a global instrument in order for measures to be globally applied to ensure effectiveness and impact. And that South Africa, working on her own in this globally regulated industry, could have unintended consequences, more especially in cases of having no enforcement capacity and non-existence of technical capacity within government for regulating. We therefore recommend in this case that for these reasons, we will not recommend that we regulate this activity at this stage, but that we should, as the department, continue working with environmental organizations to study and build the required technical capacity to understand and regulate the matter in no distant future. WWF also continued to propose that the light pollution from ships needs attention to mitigate the negative impact on the environment. And an example was raised more particularly on the squid fishery that uses bright lights in coastal waters and the impact on the insects' community to ability to navigate. And that they did, however, indicate that these matters would also require a degree of research for it to be better understood. We agree with this, and that pollution emitting from light pollution must be considered by the approving or licensing authority of that particular activity attracting pollution so that it is incorporated in the approved methods used in squid fishery agreements or licensing. We agree that in order to regulate matters raised under this point, more scientific research and investigations will be necessary. So, based on this, we're recommending that the proposed amendment as proposed by the present bill in its current form be given priority, considering the fact that the aim is to incorporate treaties that South Africa has already ratified, and that matters relating to light pollution during the squid fishing process be not considered, and that the department, however, should continue engaging with the relevant organs of state and the environmental organizations in finding the best way forward with an approach to regulate issue of light pollution during licensing for these type of activities. Mr. Chair, Honorable Chair and the members would like to end here with our responses. And I thank you for your attention and over to DDG Madia. Thank you.
DDG.
Thank you, Chair. And I think that is our submissions to this to the committee, and then we will then await to take any clarification questions or inputs on the subject. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DDG. Honorable members, that is the response from the department to the submission by the WWF, and I believe the response to a larger degree respond to the. The issues raised. Let's assess as to whether are there any clarity seeking questions that could be sought in relation to the response given by the department to the WWF's presentation. Honorable members.
Shall we? welcome the response, and we will deal with it when we deliberate. But I've been checking, Chair, through my emails. I don't seem to find the response of the department amongst the document that were given to us.
Yes,
so
yes, yes.
That,
yeah. I think we're on the same page. You are correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Also, I suspect it's by virtue of usually we'll receive the response and then come back to receive the departmental response. But I suspect it's by virtue of the fact that only one submission was made, and in terms of the work done by DOC, I suspect the team might have overlooked the need because, as the chief director indicated, he shared the response of the department with the committee. Committee secretary?
Thank you, Chairperson. We did not receive the response, so I think maybe Tandy can assist in this one. Because if we have received, we should have said with the members.
Shupaka, I have not received. Can Mr. Ntuli send the response that he was presenting so that we can send it through to you? I've not received anything.
Okay.
Yes.
Can we then agree that indeed that is an area that has to be closed, which obviously would have assisted members in terms of engaging with the presentation? Guess maybe what we might have to do now, because in terms of our program, just want to check. In terms of our second term program, committee secretary, the negotiating mandate is on the 24th of April. And then consideration is on the 3rd of May. And the final mandate and the adoption of the report is on the 8th of May. Is that the understanding? Maybe we can just probably reiterate that in terms of way forward. Committee Secretary?
Thank you, Chairperson. That's correct, Chairperson, with the program that has been submitted to the House Chairperson, which we're still waiting for the approval. That is correct, Chairperson. And given the limited space of time, because in terms of the NCOP program, we need to finish our work 3 May, but which we cannot, given our...
Okay.
Yeah, hence we push it to 8th of May.
Okay.
So that is correct.
All right. Can we then agree that once we have received responses, probably there are issues that members might want to converse in relation to response by the department to that WWF, maybe where we can ascertain that when we meet on the 24th of April, which will be mainly to deal with the negotiating mandate. We'll probably make a follow-up, just check as whether from the presentation made in relation to the responses, are there issues that members might want to converse before we deal with the negotiating mandates? Let's agree with that. And then take this opportunity then to express a word of gratitude to the TDG and the Chief Director for the responses that they gave in relation to the written submission that was made by WWF, but also as clarified more from the presentation that was made by the doc. I guess for now we are fine in relation to the written presentation and also the response by the department. But if there are any issues that members might pick up from the going through the responses by the department, we'll ascertain that when we meet in the second term. Thank you, DG. Let's then go to the next item on the agenda, which is the Luxembourg. Am I correct, Committee Secretary?
Yes, Chairperson, you are correct. And I will request Enrico to grant permission to Mr. Mwakoma Kaepeya.
Enrico, can you help?
Okay, Chair.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Select Committee. Chair, my name is Mwakoma Kaepeya. I'm the DDG responsible for rail transport in the department. Chair, I'm still trying to I'm disabled. Can I request that the Secretariat just help me so that I can then move with the presentation?
Hosting rights was granted, sir.
Thank you. Are you managing Mr. Kaepeya?
It looks like technology is not help. It's failing me, Chair. If I can be assisted.
Can they fly on your behalf?
Yes, please, Chair.
All right. Enrico, can you help that? Can you do that?
Thank you very much, Chair. Yes, I'm able to see the presentation. We can just put it on slide mode. We are, Chair, presenting to you the Luxembourg Protocol, and we thank you for the opportunity. And let me greet you together with the honorable members of the committee. The purpose, Chair, is for us to request the Select Committee on public transport, on transport public service and administration, to grant permission, Chair, of the Luxembourg Protocol to the Convention of International Interest Mobile Equipment on matters especially specific to railway rolling stock, which we really call it Luxembourg Protocol, which we believe that is a very important instrument, Chair, to be able to assist us with regard to the work that we do in the railway industry. And really assist in terms of this investment-led intervention drive for the country, which itself translates towards economic performance, that knowing the role that transport plays in that particular regard. Can we then move to the next slide, slide number three on the background, just to indicate that this Luxembourg Protocol to the Convention, Chair, we are already as a country party to the Cape Town Convention, especially when it relates to the aircraft protocol. And we have really seen that there is benefits that those colleagues who are in the airline industry, especially aviation, were able to recoup some benefits, especially around 10% reduction in terms of the financing cost that they've been experiencing. And we are saying once the Luxembourg Protocol is ratified by Parliament, the Act will obviously have to be amended to include the element of railways in terms of the protocol. This Luxembourg Protocol, Chair and Honourable Members, was adopted at Luxembourg on the 23rd of February 2007, which was at a diplomatic conference. That diplomatic conference was really attended by 42 states, which saw the critical need of this and the 12 international organizations, which are really involved in the issues of railways. And in that particular regard, the conference was sponsored by UNIROD, which is really an institute for investigation of private law, where there is a number of members which really look at the interests of law and how do we deal with the issues of uniformity and application of law at various institutions. And then lastly, by OTIF, which is the Organization for International Carriage of Railway, which will be one of those organizations that will be able to really host the registry that we seek to register and establish through the protocol itself. Moving to the next slide on the introduction, we are saying this Luxembourg Protocol is a multinational treaty which is established really to create that financing regime that will be able to make sure that there is a reduction in terms of the cost of private financing for rolling stock, especially when you look at those parties that are involved, which include the lenders, which is your financial institution, and the lessors that lease their rolling stock, and the vendors that will be able to sell this in terms of various agreements. And we have made sure that in that process, we obviously consult across the board in terms of those that are involved. But in terms of really the processes that we have followed, we have made sure that there is a presidential minute that was obtained by the Office of the President to make sure that it authorized the Minister of Transport to sign the protocol, which was signed by the previous Minister of Transport on the 22nd of March 2022. And then we then ran the approval process through Cabinet, and the protocol was approved by Cabinet to be submitted to Parliament on the 21st of June 2023. And considering the nature of the protocol, because it falls within the scope of Section 22.3.1.2 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa of 1996, it requires that before it's ratified, are able to then consider that. And we have already dealing with this process. We have went through the National Council of Province, the National Assembly, and now we are bringing it to you to be able to deal with that. Moving to the next slide on introduction is that when we have been involved as a country with our internal process of ratification, there have been some movement on the protocol with other countries coming on board to deal with the ratification. And we are pleased to inform the committee that on the 3rd of March, 2024, which is recently, the Luxembourg Protocol entered into force at a ceremony during a special intergovernmental meeting hosted by OTIF in Bern, because of the four countries that have already ratified, which really make sure that it is into force. This Organization for International Carriage of Railway, which was one of the sponsors of that particular conference that adopted the Latin, is now formally the Secretariat of the Supervisory Authority, which supervises the implementation of the protocol itself in terms of those contracting states, and make sure that there is an international registry that is established, especially in terms of the railway rolling stock, with clear numbering, which can be monitored and is operational 24/7, especially to give comfort and security to the accredited users. It allocates the unique numbers to the rolling stock, and obviously those are accepted register. In terms of the status currently, is that those that have signatures of the protocol, it's really as a South Africa, we have Mozambique, we have France, Italy, Switzerland, Germany, and Spain, and United Kingdom, and those that have rectified is Luxembourg, Gabon, and Sweden, and Spain was the fourth country to ratify, and the protocol itself for us, for it to be enforced, needed those particular four states. It currently obviously applies to four contracting states, which is Luxembourg, Gabon, and Sweden. And obviously we are looking at the kind of the operational element to follow that as a country, so that once we deal with our internal processes, we're already really ready to comply. And in that regard, when this was established, South Africa was then obviously nominated by those countries to then they must be a part of the international registry of the supervisory authority to really understand some of the issues that are happening there and how the system is being set up, so that we are able to comply once we are done with the country. Look at the next slide, which is really the strategic of the license protocol. I mean, we have realized that over the years, as a rail sector, we've really wanted to raise a number of money, resources in terms of money to invest in our railways, but we have not really been able to do that. They've been inadequate, especially with the 300 billion that Transnet wanted to raise. And we have really seen that affecting our state entities to really meet the obligation of that investment, because that results in high level of borrowings in terms of the percentage, especially it really affects the investment climate that we want to deal with. And we know currently we even have some of the challenges in terms of the credit rating downgrades in terms of the country. So we believe that the protocol is really aligned to the policy and regulatory instrument of the country, namely the National Development Plan, in really making sure that there's investment in economic growth and the Economic and Reconstruction Recovery Plan. We direct that there is private sector participation. We believe that it really will assist the country in terms of the challenges that we have even slowed down the sector, especially coming from COVID itself. Moving to the next slide on the strategic focus, we really see this protocol really will assist the country with regard to the private sector financing appetite, especially with the rail policy, National Rail Policy White Paper that will be approved by Cabinet in March 2022, which really talks to the trust of investment-led railways in the country to make sure that we can invest in the sector, and we must invite other players to be able to play that particular role, because the policy pronounced on the establishment of the rolling stock leasing companies, which we as government sees that as another funding stream to unlock investment, because government will then focus its effort on the below rail investment, which is infrastructure, which is your track and its associated system. And then the rail operating companies will then be able to then invest in this sector, which we see, I mean, the kind of studies that have happened and really and funding an industry of around 140 billion investment in the country. And we know that African Union in January 2015 has taken this decision to then say South Africa must be a manufacturing hub for rolling stock in Africa to be able to depend the issue of investment. And we know we've already invested in terms of the Gibela factory in Ekurhuleni, which we want to use it as an instrument to be able to invest in the region and in SADC itself, and obviously in Africa. And how do we then make sure that when we go and do those investments together with PRASA and Transnet, we are protected in that regard? Because what the protocol does, it will make sure that it assists securing affordable private sector financing for the acquisition and obviously leasing of rolling stock, allowing exportation of rolling stock into the rest of Africa, because we as a country, we've already really got those requests, especially of some of the excess rolling stock that we really do. What we then see in the next slide, Chair, Honorable Members, as the advantages for the protocol is that it set out these common international legal instruments for funders those that will be financing rolling stock. And obviously, if there's challenges of default, we know that at least you can be able to know how, where is your rolling stock located because of the registry that you have talked about, which then obviously reduces the creditor's risk in supporting our policy imperatives. Like I've already talked to that it has this register that it is obviously providing. We believe that with this unique rail vehicle identification system, the protocol will facilitate more affordable financing for the sector and then to be able to support the element that we do. And one of the critical elements, we know when there's cheaper financing in the next slide, the protocol itself help us to lower the barriers of entry, especially in terms of the third party access. Honorable members will know that Transnet is already in a process of consulting with the department on the network statement to ensure that they show the available capacity on the network. And we believe this protocol will play that role to make sure that one, it promotes the new entrants, becomes easy for them to be able to get in. And we've already engaged even with the financial institution in the country of how do we help them to get so that there's clear economic opportunities in the country and new business opportunities and promoting transformation to make sure that we are able to deal with that. And there's been a study that was done by the Rail Working Group, which is a Swiss-based nonprofit organization, obviously working with the rail industry through ARIA in the country, with National Treasury, DTI, to really justify the level of investment of this. And over a 10-year period, really, there we see financial of refinancing of the rolling stock in Africa, obviously to around really 33.4 billion rand, which we really see that. And that study was engaged with us as a part of really seeing what then becomes the benefit of the country. With regard to consultation, we have really consulted across the board on the next slide in terms of the sector itself, those various government institutions and departments, National Treasury, and obviously their role in terms of the financial elements, DTI in terms of the issue of how do we make sure that we grow the country and African continental free agreement, and how do we put into that Department of Public Enterprise the shoulder, DECO, what we have done, Chair, as part of the process. Obviously, we have submitted the protocol through the state law advisors within them, DECO, so that they are able to show whether it's not in conflict with our local
recording
and
stopped.
And we have engaged with PRASA, Transnet, Gautrain, and the export credit insurance companies, the business forums, and we have taken it through government approval process through the ESET cluster, the ICTS cluster, and we've obtained this legal opinion that I've talked to from both the Department of Justice and Coastal Development and from International Relations and Cooperation. And both the law advisors advise that the protocol falls within the ambit of
recording in progress
312 of the constitutions, and that's why we are engaging with this particular process. We believe, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, that once the protocol really it is approved and ratified, it will support the policy imperatives of the country, being the white paper on the national rail policy, the road freight logistics roadmap that has really been just recently being approved by cabinet. We then talks to how do we then crowd in private sector investment in the country, but understanding that strategic assets, which is the infrastructure of the railways, will still remain in the hands of government as an owner of that particular infrastructure, but allowing third-party access, third-party operators to come on the network where there's capacity in various models, either being concession on third-party access to really operate their trains, and government will be able to get some money out of that in terms of the access charge and invest it back in terms of the access charge and invest it back into the infrastructure. We see this as one of those game changers to contribute towards the growth and the investment in the railway sector. On the last slide, Chair, we therefore our recommendation saying we obviously it is recommended that the select committee grant permission for approval of the protocol for ratification in terms of section 2312 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa of 1996. With that said, Chair, I thank you, and obviously we'll take guidance from you if there's any other questions of clarity. Thank you very much.
Chair is in mute.
My apology, members. Let's appreciate the presentation on the Luxembourg Protocol to the Convention on International Interest in Mobile Equipment on Matters Specific to the Railway Rolling Stock, as presented by Mr. Makaipia. I'll invite members for clarity seeking questions. I've seen Honorable Dango. The floor is yours, Ambassador.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, just the question is, today are we required to ratify the protocol and the agreement as recommended by the presenter? If that is so, then I think we should consider that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ambassador. Any further questions from members? Let's check. Just this question from myself on the implication of this protocol on some of the existing agreement that we have that Praza has with Kibela. Remember that the agreement the agreement is to supply 600 passenger trains as entered into in 2015, and this agreement comes to an end in 2025. What will be the implication of this protocol on this Kibela Praza program? The second one, under Article 25 of protocol, the Quartin State could prevent creating from repossessing rolling stock that is habitually used for purpose of providing services of public importance. Now the question is, what factors could be taken into consideration in making the determination that the freight rolling stock is deemed to be of such public importance? I think this is important, because the understanding is that the state will have the ability to require a creditor to continue use of such equipment for the same purpose in exchange for government compensation equal to the greater one the amount of government would be required to pay under its national law, and two, the market lease rental for such equipment. The next one also is relates to the fact that the understanding is that the registry would be operational by the fourth quarter of 2023, was the milestone that was reached as far back as June 2010. The internal intergovernmental organization for international carriage by rail and the International Institute for the Unification of Private Law began a tender process inviting interested parties to submit proposals to be appointed as the registrar for an international registry for railway stock. I think also the fact that the protocol applies to financing of rolling stock that operates domestically as well as internationally. And it also introduces a new, a global, unique, and permanent numbering system. The question is whether would entities such as South African Railway Safety Regulator, the Cross-Border Road Transport Authority, and Custom Authority, both regulatory and enforcement mandates require access to the unique rail vehicle identification system? And if so, how will this access be facilitated? Then the last one is in relation to the fact that the Luxembourg Protocol will facilitate more affordable finance from the private sector to support new rolling stock procurement as well as financing existing. Now the question just is as to whether will the implementation of the protocol allow the Department of Transport to increase its targeted transfer of freight from road to rail over the MTF period? And furthermore, what is the revised figures anticipated to look like compared to the current target of 10%? Over to you, Mr. Magapia.
Thanks, Chair, for the questions. Chair, I had some challenges, I think, with my network. I could hear you when you talk about maybe the first question on the implication on Gibela trains. And then I lost you when you were talking about Article 25. I could hear you talking about quarter four of 2024. But when you talk about whether does it applies to financing institutions, including RSR access and the last one, I could hear you. I don't know if Chair would mind to repeat that one just on the Article 25. I could only hear you talking about end of quarter four, and then I'll then respond to all of them, Chair.
Okay. I think from the presentation, you did indicate that the protocol set out common international legal rights for funders that is financing the rolling stock. But also, it also includes the easing repossession of collateral on debtor default or insolvency, thereby substantially reducing creditor risk and thus financing costs. So the question is, because under Article 25 of the protocol, a contracting state could prevent a creditor from repossessing a rolling stock that is habitually used for the purpose of providing services of a public importance, and that a state will have the ability to require a creditor to continue use of such equipment for the same purpose in exchange for government compensation equal to the greater one of the amount of the government would be required to pay under its international law, and two, the market lease rental for such equipment. Now the question is, what factors could be taken into consideration in making the determination that freight rolling stock is deemed to be of public importance? That's the question. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, for the questions. I think I now got the questions. The first one, Chair, whether there'll be an implication of the protocol on the existing arrangement, especially those that of Kibela. The protocol as it is now, Chair, it doesn't obviously apply to us. And remember, the Kibela contract, it's a special purpose vehicle that was established by PRASA to be able to deliver the trains. And remember that as the state, we are fully gonna honor the contract because the contract was gazetted through by the Minister of Transport. So it will only apply to those obviously new initiatives that will happen beyond us obviously ratifying. So it won't really deal with those. So what will happen, Chair, is that once we get approval and ratification by both houses of Parliament on the protocol, what will then happen is that we'll then deposit, obviously, the instrument of our intention as the country. Then South Africa, through the Department of Transport, will be part now because we'll have ratified of the supervisory authority, which I said in the presentation that is already in force, which will then determine the rules of engagement of those that will be able to, so that when the issues are happening in the country, we're able to then tell the industry what are the compliance measures in terms of those. I mean, for us as government and as a shareholder, we'll then obviously represent the government SOEs, those that wants to do a business in terms of acquiring of the rolling stock, especially those operators. And we'll obviously working with the industry, which is the ARIA and the Rail Working Group, will obviously, upon ratification and when we participate in the OTF, be able to then give feedback to that. Because RSR, obviously, as the regulator in the industry, give permit in terms of the rolling stock that are applicable towards their standards internally. We believe that the protocol, Chair, on the question of whether it will help us in terms of really movement from road to rail and inclusion of the kind of tonnages that we want to help, we believe it will contribute, because one of the challenges that we are having and why we're able to drop from 254 million tons, Chair, is that in terms of the freight, was because of the unavailability of rolling stock and some of those challenges by Transnet. So if you then have more operators on board, which can be able to bring in their rolling stock, which the open access framework and the private sector participation in line with the policy, obviously that will be able to assist us in terms of really moving some of the commodities that the mines are able to mine. And we believe it will assist us again, even in terms of the protection of jobs in the mining sector. So what is the projections now in our engagement, Chair? You will remember that through the road freight logistics roadmap, there is a National Logistics Crisis Committee, which has been put there to be able to deal with the operational element and working closely with both with Transnet and the rail industry itself. And we have seen some increase and some changes, which is and the projection now in the next financial year that Transnet has put in terms of the tonnages is around 170 million tons. And obviously with more rolling stocks, you'll be able to then put more and be able to deal with those particular issues. So we believe really it is a contributory factor to be able to assist us with our policy mandate and the direction that government wants to take. With regard to the collateral and reposition, I mean, is that probably the factors that will be taken into consideration, Chair, is really the issue of public interest with regard to that. And we'll obviously when we discuss the details in terms of the supervisory authority and the kind of elements or, and the ratification that we want to put as a country, be able to then obviously deal with those conditions. But I'm sure as government, we'll be able to make sure that the interest of the country in terms of the work that we need to deal with are really taking into consideration the economic interest and what we want to support in terms of our movement from rail to rail imperatives moving forward. I think from my side, those will be my inputs in terms of the questions that they have been raised. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Makapia, for the response. Ambassador, is that a legacy hand? I guess that is the legacy hand from the Ambassador Dango. The sense that I get is that members are comfortable with the presentation that you made and also the responses that you gave in relation to the question that you posed. So I think we are fine now in terms of the Luxembourg Protocol. Less than Committee Secretary.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Do you have the report?
Yes, Enrico, can you flag the report?
Chairperson, yes,
and honorable members, this is the report in front of you. The report reads as follows. A report of the Select Committee on Public Transport, Public Service and Administration, Public Works and Infrastructure on the Luxembourg Protocol to the Convention of International Interest in Mobile Equipment on Matters Specific to Railway Rolling Stock, dated 27 March 2024. The Select Committee on Transport, Public Service and Administration, Public Works and Infrastructure received a briefing from the Department of Transport on the strategic focus and objective of the Luxembourg Protocol to the Convention of International Interest in Mobile Equipment on Matters Specific to the Railway Rolling Stock, which is the Luxembourg Protocol on 27 March 2024. The Luxembourg Protocol is a multilateral treaty that established an international asset-based financing regime that will enable and reduce the cost of private financing for rail stock. It creates a new worldwide legal framework to recognize and regulate security interests of leaders, lessors, and vendors selling under conditional agreements and where are secured by rolling stock. The protocol sets out common international legal rights for funders financing rolling stock, including easing repossession of collateral on debtor default or insolvency, thereby substantially reducing creditors' risk and thus financing the cost. The Select Committee has considered the protocol against the backdrop of the recommendations of the National Development Plan, the White Paper on National Rail Policy, and the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan, which directs greater private participation. Having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the Luxembourg Protocol to the Convention on International Interest in Mobile Equipment on Matters Specific to Railway Rolling Stock, referred to it, the Select Committee recommends that the National Council of Provinces, in terms of the Section 2312 of the Constitution, 1990s approved the said protocol. A report to be considered. Chairperson, that is the report in front of which the committee need to approve before it's sent to.
Thank you, thank you. Thank you, Committee Secretary. Honorable members, that is the report on the Luxembourg Protocol. I put the report to the members. Is there any reflection that members would want to make in relation to the report? Any comment? Let me then put the report to the select committee. For those that are in favor of the select committee adopting the report on the Luxembourg Protocol, can they indicate that by that is in their hand? Committee Secretary? Better.
Sorry, Chairperson, I was muted.
Yes,
I will start the way the hands are reflected here in my platform. I see the hands of Honorable Dango from Gauteng, the hand of Honorable Boshoff from Mpumalanga, the hand of Honorable Khayi from Eastern Cape, and the hand of Honorable Moshodi from Free State, and the hand of yourself, Chairperson, from Northern Cape, and the hand of Honorable Brotherthes from KwaZulu-Natal.
Thank you, Committee Secretary. Can members lower their hands? Those that are against the adoption of the report on the Luxembourg Protocol, can they do that by? Committee Secretary?
No one, Chairperson.
Anyone that is abstaining, members, can they do that by indicating through the raise hand option? Committee Secretary?
No abstinence, Chairperson.
Therefore, the report on the Luxembourg Protocol is unanimously adopted by the committee. It will then be sent to the House for adoption. And let me then take this opportunity to express a word of gratitude to the DDG, the Chief Director, and the team for grazing our committee meeting today to deal with those two items. As we have indicated, it will then be sent for adoption. That is the recommendation that the committee will be making to the House, the plenary. With your team, you are free to leave DDG because now we are only left with our in-house matters. In this instance, the minutes. Committee Secretary.
Thank you, Chairperson Enrico. May please find the minutes.
Yes, Committee Secretary.
Chairperson, this is the minutes. I will request Enrico to go down. The agenda, Chairperson, we were receiving a briefing by the Department of Public Service Commission on the key recommendations contained in its 2024 report on the public service reforms towards professionalization. A public service committee perspective. So, Chairperson, you can see those are the members who were present and their apologies. And our guest, the staff Chairperson. The apologies as you can see. The presentation, Chairperson, the structure of the presentation. Thereafter, Chairperson, the committee deliberations. Those are the committee deliberations, Chairperson. I will request and record this, not so fast. I won't go through them, but these are the deliberations, Chairperson. And the next item was the consideration of the president's letter on the implementation of the State Capture Commission recommendations. And consideration and adoption of the minutes of 13th of March. That's the minutes, Chairperson. Over to you, Chair.
Thank you, Committee Secretary, for taking us through the minutes. Any correction that members might have noticed that has to be done, addition or subtraction? Can we then get a for the adoption of the minutes of the 20th of March as a true reflection of what transpired last week, in last week's meeting? Can I get a mover?
I move, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Khai, for moving for the minutes to be adopted. Can you get a seconder?
I'll second, Chair.
Thank you, Ambassador. Therefore, the minutes of the 20th of March is duly adopted. And I believe that the agenda for the day is exhausted, Committee Secretary.
That's correct, Chairperson.
Thank you. Then our next meeting, when is our next meeting?
17 April, Chair.
17 April. And you indicated that we are finishing the 3rd of May.
8th of May.
8th of May. All right. Okay. Let's then take this opportunity to express a word of gratitude to the honorable members of the Select Committee on Transport, Public Service and Administration, and for ensuring that the meeting is truly succeeding, but also for ensuring that the committee is able to process the business of the day. As we are going on Good Friday, and also the month of Ramadan, let's wish our members to take good care of themselves during this hectic month and hectic weekend. And until we meet in the second term on the 17th of April, the meeting is formally adjourned. Thank you, honorable members.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honorable Khai.
Thank you, Chairperson. Stay safe, everyone.
Recording stopped.
Thank you very much. Happy stay weekend.